ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Hello, I'm Frank Kelly, and every day on the Radio National Hour, I take a deep breath and dive in.
If you can have a chip implanted in your brain to help control traumatic memory, then all you have to do is drop the adjective traumatic and it can control memory.
And he said, oh, well, we'll just take your stomach out. And in my head, I was like, how do you live without a stomach?
We're a funny species, Fran. You know, I think we're the only animal who seems to be hell-bent on their own destruction.
So if you want to know how to live without a stomach, or more about David Wenham's ideas for world peace, come find me on the Radio National Hour, right here on ABC Listen.
Today, the Australian people have voted for Australian values.
Yeah! The choice is simple for the Liberal Party. Change or die.
We need to have more Australian everything. We need to manifest a hyper-Australia.
We've always been about the planet, but we've got to make sure that people have their daily needs met.
People are starting to see that there is actually a different way of doing politics.
Hello and welcome to The Party Room. I'm Patricia Carvelis and I'm joining you from Wurundjeri country in Melbourne.
And I'm Fran Kelly on the Gadigal land of the Eora Nation in Sydney. And PK, it's been a lot this week, but I would call it a lot of little bits. Some, let's use this word, sexier than others.
Oh, look, sexy is the word of the week for me. Bitsy, but very busy and very consequential, actually. So a couple of things. The Trump administration announced their pick for US ambassador to Australia, a very extremely right-wing figure, Christian right kind of figure, not really very within the vibe of a progressive government, but whatever. They unveiled their news bargaining code, telling tech giants to pay up for news. And basically, if they don't pay, they can't operate in Australia, essentially. Pauline Hanson flouted her, as we just talked about, sexy new plane, very sexy.
And sexy is Pauline Hanson's word, can I say? That's not our word.
No. Although, I absolutely can fact check it. It's a sexy plane. She's right. It's a gift from Gina Reinhart, of course. Well, it seems pretty clear. There's been a bit of a trend there. Gina does seem to love Pauline. And guess what? The economy was the key focus.
No.
It is the only focus for so many people. And Fran, it's always really ultimately the economy, stupid, especially less than 2 weeks from the budget.
Well, that's true. And especially when inflation jumps almost an entire percent. And that's what we got, an enormous hike this week in inflation from 3.7 to 4.6. That's huge. Not really unexpected, I guess, because we all watch the petrol prices jump so quickly when the war in Iran broke out. But, you know, it spells more trouble for homeowners and almost certainly will bring a rate hike. And, of course, then it will spell more trouble for the government too. And we'll get into that with Shane Wright in a moment. PK, there's also rumblings of a gas tax going on. It's a move very popular with people. The polls are showing. But the Prime Minister says no.
No gas tax for you.
And again, we'll test Shane on that.
Yeah, we will. And the housing reforms, of course, are still on the agenda very much. In fact, the government, like the Treasurer, is making it so clear that that's the road he's travelling on, a road I think he's been wanting to be on for a long time. The opposition is signalling it won't support the capital gains tax discount changes. We'll find out what Shane thinks of that. And the coalition fuel reserve policy was announced this week too, to double our reserves from the 30 days we currently are sort of meant to have fuel to 60 days at a cost of about $800 million to the taxpayer. But of course, industry would have to pay and consumers would pay a little more too. And they were pretty upfront about that. We've got the wonderful Shane Wright. We've been banging on about him. Let's bring him in. He's senior economics correspondent for The Age and the Sydney Morning Herald, often known as Australia's biggest Kate Bush fan, which I've always thought makes him a very special dude. Shane, welcome to The Party Room.
I am very special, but not as special as the great Kate Bush.
No.
Special, not sexy, Shane, just so you got that clear.
Shane, I was feeling more comfortable that being called special, let me assure you.
Shane, we know that the Shadow Treasurer, Tim Wilson's been making some cheeky budget playlist suggestions for Jim Chalmers. There's a whole thing if people want to look it up. So I've got one question for you, Shane. Is Jim Chalmers running up that inflation hill?
Oh, look, I'm going back to the great Dreaming album. There's a song there called There Goes a Tenor, which may be a bit, and it's all about a failed bank heist, very much on par with a budget. Kate also sang a song called Pi, which she sang the full first 100 digits of Pi, budgets are full of numbers, so I'm in a happy place.
I knew you'd be all over that. I knew you'd come up with something.
Yeah, it's kind of the running up the hill analogy is, it feels like a very steep hill, a difficult economic hill we're currently on. So let's take us to the biggest news of the week, which frames the current environment, right? The CPI. Take me through why it's such a big deal. It rose to 4.6%, Shane. That is obviously really high. Remember, the Reserve Bank's target inflation figure is between 2-3%. I don't know. I don't think you have to have an economics degree or even basic mathematic literacy to know that 4.6% is definitely not in that area.
It is not. Of course, if the big driver, as you two have mentioned, is petrol, then petrol prices nationally lifted about a third in that month. If it wasn't for petrol, inflation would have fallen. It would have gone from 3.7 to 3.4%. That is telling you a whole lot about what's going on about the inflation figure and petrol. Look, I know you girls are talking about how sexy you are. Jewelry, a bit of bling. Jewelry prices are up 20% over the last 12 months. And that's due to the gold price that's been chugging along over that period. Like a bit of lamb, bit of beef. Both real, there's long, strong demand out of the United States because they just don't have enough red meat at the moment. Those things are ticking up about 16 and 12%. So there are a lot of things going on, but you've hit it in one, that what it means around for the Reserve Bank and interest rates. But interestingly, when those numbers came out, markets actually wound back expectations of a rate hike next week.
They're still high though, aren't they?
Oh, they're still high.
But you still put your money on a rate rise, wouldn't you?
I would. I'd put your money on it, Fran.
Never your own.
But this was the interesting thing, because there are a lot of people who've been saying, like there are a lot of market players who've put money down saying there'll be a rate hike next week for some time. And then they get this, oh, hold on. This is going to be a close run thing, because let's go back 5 or 6 weeks to the last Reserve Bank board meeting. It was a 5-4 vote in favour of a rate hike then. Mm. And the people, and at the time, the bank actually said, look, we're a bit worried about what high oil prices might do to the economy. They may slow the economy down, and then we might have a bit of unemployment. That's something we have to worry about. We're so uncertain, but the pick was that, oh, right, the war may be resolved by then.
Okay.
Anyone saying that the war's been resolved by now?
No. Mm. I spoke to an oil analyst last night from the Gulf, from one of the Gulf states, who said they're not expecting the Straits, even if the war was resolved now, the Strait of Hormuz to open till August, and because of mines and lack of production, all that sort of stuff. And therefore, these high oil prices, you know, are going to likely to stay high as perhaps till this time next year. So, you know, that's not looking like any real relief soon. But Shane, just on something you said, that this inflation spike was, if it hadn't been the fuel prices, inflation would have gone down. Tim Wilson, the shadow treasurer, and Jim Chalmers have been engaging in a bit of a tit-for-tat duel of the barbs this week.
If he wants a song playlist, the best one to describe a treasurer who takes from young Australians who wants to get their first foothold on the ladder of opportunity and denies them that privilege, as they seem to be flagging the lead-up to the budget, the song that comes to mind for him is Smooth Criminal.
I think he's really embracing this role as the opposition's karaoke clown. And we saw that yesterday. I mean, to be fair to Tim Wilson, you know, from time to time people will get a number wrong. That happens from time to time. There are a lot of numbers in this Treasury portfolio, but Tim Wilson seems incapable of getting anything right.
And Tim Wilson says that the latest rise, yes, it's been driven by fuel costs, but we already had a homegrown inflation figure, so the government can't blame it all on the oil cost. Is that right?
Look, I would never attribute absolute truth to every politician going around, or any of them, in fact, but he has touched on something that is clearly evident, that there is too much demand in the economy, and that was there before the war started at the end of February. And part of that has been driven by government spending. Part of it is federal government spending. There is effectively too much spending. There's too much activity in the economy for it to absorb it.
But that's heading down. Is that what you're saying? That if it hadn't been the fuel hike, inflation would have started to ease?
We would have seen that. And remember, and we have to think, right, the Reserve Bank lifted interest rates in February and then in mid-March. Mm-hmm. For most mortgage holders, that second rate rise hasn't even touched their repayments yet. So you've got to start, and this is where the Reserve Bank and all central banks, they are always looking well into the future because it takes time for changes in monetary policy to really affect the economy. So you've got two rate rises coming down through the chain of the broader economy. We know that house values are falling in Sydney and Melbourne right now, and we will see that every housing market is starting to slow. So that's the impact of rate rises just at the start. So the activity is there, and a lot of it is tied up with the private sector. The AI expenditure at the moment is really extraordinary. However, there is a lot of government spending. You can't get away from that. The states are a big spender. They're actually bigger than the feds, particularly in the infrastructure space. And the Fed government spending is high. You can't get away from that. So you can understand why Tim Wilson is going down that path, because it is something that the Liberal Party is going to mine all the way from here till election day.
Yeah, you can understand that, that's for sure. Look, let's just go to some of the specific things that we know will be looked at in the budget. One of them, of course, is something that you know very well because you've been writing a lot about it, Shane. Housing, that's where we're expecting some pretty significant and, you know, historically at least very contentious reforms. It seems that things might be changing though. The government's big thing is we're going to tackle intergenerational equality. Now, it's been long argued that there's a problem with intergenerational equality and fairness for younger people, and now they've adopted the language of people who were previously their critics, right? Now they're using their language. Shane, last week you reported the government was considering a pre-1999 system rather than reducing the current 50% discount on capital gains. Today you also have a piece about how the Treasurer is signalling reforms would be grandfathered for those who already held taxable assets. So that's very smart, isn't it? That's him saying, hey, if you've got one, don't freak out. It won't be retrospective. What do you know?
Well, you've just reported everything I know.
No. What do you know more?
What do I know more? We're really heavily focused on capital gains tax, the concession there, because that has been a problem ever since it was introduced by Peter Costello and John Howard back in 1999, because it hasn't worked anywhere like it was supposed to. Negative gearing, Joe Lyons introduced that in the 1930s. It's been around a very, very long time, and it has been a bête noire of the Labor Party for some time. But then again, I think you would remember Joe Hockey's farewell speech from Parliament after he stepped down as Treasurer. He said, we have to do something about negative gearing. Scott Morrison flirted with the idea of capping the number of homes that could be negatively geared.
He did.
This has been around because it's the interaction of negative gearing and capital gains tax. But put that to one side, because that is a very important change if they push through with it. And I can see every vested interest in the property sector going off whatever they come up with. There will be other elements of it really focused at younger buyers, trying to help them buy a home. So you've seen some of this. It's interesting. Claire O'Neill has been rolling out some spending in really, this is the hard grind of building more homes. So here in Canberra, they're spending some money on moving some high voltage power lines, so they can build about an extra 400 homes close to the city centre. There's some cash that's gone down into Tassie to move sewage pipes to put that infrastructure in place. They are spending, there's a lot more going into what's called enabling infrastructure than the government actually thought it was going to have to spend, because they've woken up to the fact that you can't build more homes if you don't have the streets, the power, the sewer pipes. Mm.
And interestingly, that was a big policy idea from the coalition last time, wasn't it?
It certainly was.
Opposition's already sounding and has been sounding like it will oppose measures to get rid of the capital gains tax and negative gearing. Tim Wilson working out his attacks line here, suggesting this would lead to, quote, fights over the kitchen table.
What we know is the Prime Minister is trying to turn families against each other and start fights over the kitchen table about a redistribution agenda where it's about taking from parents to give to children. What the Prime Minister isn't doing is giving the next generation of Australians hope about building a better future for self-starters who want to get ahead.
And this is the intergenerational pitch. They reckon they're pitting one generation against another. Do you think it's going to be difficult for the opposition to sustain that argument? Because not only are young people the biggest voter base and growing, they are upset about what they see as intergenerational or generational inequity. But for the government, the coalition's plan is, okay, if you want to address intergenerational equity, an income tax is the only answer, is the best answer. Do you think the government's going to go to that in this budget? Is it likely to have any kind of shift to the interest rates to stave off that criticism from the coalition? And how careful will it be to construct an intergenerational equity narrative around any money they save by cutting capital gains tax and negative gearing? Because potentially that could be a lot, though I think you've got some news for us on that. And if it is a lot, don't they need to be showing that they're not just putting it to the bottom line, they're not just staving off other problems, they're actually doing something about this inequity?
Yeah, there's a lot there. In terms of the Liberal Party, there's a fight within the Liberal Party about whether to support these things, any changes, particularly around CGT. Younger Liberals outside the party and some of those who lost at the last election saying, we have to do something because, sorry, our voter base, boomers, are dying.
Yeah.
They are literally dying. Younger people are moving through the voting pack as we speak, and they don't own a home. I'll give you like a little startling stat for you just to, because I know you love numbers. So back in 1999-2000 when the CGT concession was reduced, there were about 109,000 people under the age of 30 who owned a rental property, a single rental property, and about 120,000 over the age of 60. Latest available figures, the number of under 30s with a rental home has actually fallen to about 95,000 of... This is in a pop, the population's actually increased by 40% over that time. So, fall in that. There now, the number of people over the age of 60 with a rental home is 27% of the entire market.
Wow.
The number of over 60s with six or more properties has increased 400%.
God.
So you've got that. That's age. On income, the number of people with more than half a million taxable income owning six homes has increased 1,529%.
Oh, my God.
I had to recheck that number three times because I went, you're kidding me. And so if you want to talk about intergenerational equity, the tax office is giving you numbers showing the high prices that have screwed over young people over the last 25 years is reflected in the rental market and in who owns all these homes. So you've actually seen the number of people, young people who are landlords, actually absolutely collapse, and it's just been hoovered up by everyone over 60 or people earning about 500,000 or even above 100,000. Mm. So that's what's gone on. So that's, you can see, I think I was talking to somebody in the government recently. They said part of the anger that we're seeing that's reflected in the populist vote for on the right and the left, the Greens, One Nation, that sort of thing, is being driven by young people who have given up because they know they've been screwed over by the property market. And they look at the property market and they go, who owns the property market? It is people in their 50s and 60s. It is boomers and young exes.
Yeah, and young exes.
Young exes.
Some of my best friends are young.
That's right. So it's more than a political argument. It is the political fragmentation that's gone on. And so people who have stuff, they're older and they're looking around saying, why don't you young people get along? And the young people go, because the median house value in Sydney is $1.6 million. The average mortgage now in Sydney is $750,000.
30 years ago, banks gave you a 20-year mortgage. They can't give you a 20-year mortgage now. They have to do 30 years because the size of the loan is so large at 20, it's unaffordable.
Wow, that's insane, isn't it?
So that's what's going – that's that. You can understand why you get – this is why – like Tim Wilson, for instance, has been banging on about housing affordability for some time, even when he was – before he became Shadow Treasurer. But this government has also been banging on, and they've gone, we've got to build more homes, which they're trying to do. But they also say the tax system is part of this whole issue too.
Yeah, and they've now allowed everyone else to build the case, build the momentum around it. So they've been helped by, I think, you know, a whole bunch of experts, activists, political kind of figures to build the momentum. And now they step in and they frame it as, you know, here is Labor delivering for young people, for restructuring and dealing with your grievances. That's what I think they're trying to do. Doesn't mean there won't be backlash, though. And I think some of the points you make, Shane, about internally in the Liberal Party, it's not just the ones that have left, although they are louder about it, I think, the ones that are no longer in the party room. There are even people in the party room who are aware that these are the current party room, not many, but aware that they need to pivot on some of these issues, or they end up looking like the party that's just for boomers and that can't – it's not sustainable electorally, as you say, like let alone it's just not perhaps the right policy answer as well. I want to just, if I can, pivot us to another area that I think has popular appeal, maybe populist appeal, and that's this gas export tax. And the Prime Minister – was really very clear this week. I thought he spoke at the Chamber of Minerals and Energy event in WA on Wednesday morning. We're recording this Thursday. He said the budget won't undermine existing contracts.
In other words, our gas exports are directly linked to our national fuel security. And the middle of a global fuel crisis is the worst possible time to jeopardise these relationships or the investment that underpins them. That is why I can confirm that the budget will not undermine existing contracts on gas exports.
Well, it was pretty clear, I thought, Shane, but what I also thought was clear is that he did not lock himself in forever because there is a strong campaign for this, and I think Labor is very aware that it's just going to keep building.
You're right, and I think I would point to two things. One is he was very clear, no new tax on for existing contracts. And this is it's an exceptionally important point, and it goes to the second one, which is where has Anthony Albanese been in the last 2 weeks? He's been to Brunei, he's been to Singapore, he's been to Malaysia. You've got
Penny Wong in China,
lots of discussions with Japan and South Korea. And so the people proposing let's tax all gas, one, if you go down that path, you are going to make an impact on existing contracts. And some of those existing contracts are with companies that are owned by foreign governments. So you can we talk about sovereign risk. So you say, right, we're going to start taxing these sorts of things, and it's going to affect these other countries who we need as well. We need the refined oil and the jet fuel and the fertilizers that come out of these nations. So this is one of the reasons Albanese has made those trips and why Wong has made this trip to China, to reassure people we are not going to do over contracts that we have signed in good faith and you have signed in good faith to try and grab a windfall gain.
Sure, but that's all very well. But look at the Guardian Essential poll this week. 57% of voters are supportive of taxing profits on gas exports. This campaign, this grassroots campaign, well, not entirely grassroots, but it's sort of pushed along by independents like David Pocock, for instance, Senator, is really getting ahead of steam up, isn't it?
It is, but I think if you're Albanese, you'd say, well, okay, we'll tax that and we won't have petrol. Someone will shut us off to diesel or petrol or fertilizer. Which would you prefer? And remember, like Qatar, which is our biggest competitor and the biggest supplier, alongside us, the biggest supplier of LNG in the world, is cut off from the world market. So if you're a Malaysia or a Singapore, you want the assurance that there's not going to be any change to price for you. And in return, we will make sure you get access to the stuff that makes Australia turn around, which is petrol, diesel fertilizer.
So they have to make that case very strongly, and let's see how their communication skills are around that, because fuel security, you know, is a huge issue. As you say, the Prime Minister's been on that, what is it, petro-diplomacy tour, is that what you call it, PK? And Penny Wong's out and about now in the region doing the same thing. But the opposition has sort of looked to capitalise on this. It's unveiled their new fuel reservation policy this week, which is doubling the minimum fuel reserves held in Australia to 60 days.
And we're going to make a significant contribution towards that doubling by putting $800 million into supporting new storages. That's about 1 billion litres of new storage that we'll be supporting to double the stock holdings under the MSO here in Australia.
Now, in total, Angus Taylor says it'll come with an $800 million price tag for taxpayers, which will mean about an extra cent per litre to the cost of petrol, and that money would be spent providing loans to incentivise private investment. Now, the government didn't jump for it, didn't go for it, but it is suggesting, hinting that energy security is going to be a core pillar of this upcoming budget. Should the government have engaged with this idea, PK? I wonder what you think, because I think on the face of it, I think a lot of Australians would think, well, right now that sounds like a good idea. We better get on with dealing this in case we face this threat again. It's not a huge price tag. Where do you think the government will go on this?
Yeah, I think that one is something they actually probably have been considering, of course. They haven't jumped on it, but, you know, they've been playing the man. I've been saying on the pod throughout the week, like, they really played, they ripped apart the fact that Angus Taylor introduced it, because on the premise that, you know, he'd been not a good energy minister, as they're trying to frame him, rather than actually dealing with the substance, the idea itself.
After he was the bloke as energy minister who oversaw four oil refineries being shut down. You know, this is like putting the burglar in charge of security. The bloke that did all the damage is now saying, trust me to fix it. I don't think,
of course, having a stockpile of fuel is smart. Of course we're going to have more crises like that. We know that. Look at the last 20 years in this country. It's been full of that sort of up, down, you know, from the GFC, right, Shane? So, you know, it's sensible, but Labor has been pretty political about its response, hasn't it?
They have been, but I think it's because they've got something coming.
Yeah, same.
We're going to see it on May 12th, and that's why. And this is why budgets are so important for a government. Like, incumbency is such an advantage. Budgets are a huge advantage because you can lay out something that people will think, oh, that is going to happen, as opposed to Angus Taylor in opposition, possibly losing a seat inside a week. The relevancy around the opposition is depleted, very much so. So Albanese, as we all know, plays hard. That's been his political modus operandi for a very long time. It's not going to change. But I think you're right, PK. The budget will contain more than just money for increasing supply, and holding it, but how you do it, and linkages in to those refineries across Southeast Asia.
Yeah, absolutely it will. And I think you nailed it. Like, you can see there's almost, they don't look nervous, do they? They don't look like they're under pressure on this. They're like, oh, we've got it. And you know what? To give them credit, their petro diplomacy has been so far rather successful, hasn't it, Shane? I mean, it just has. Like, it's been difficult for the coalition to get traction on this, because even the cut to the fuel excise, which I know the coalition got in a few days ahead, but whatever, they did it. And, you know, I've been looking at petrol prices around and I'm like, oh, that's all right. You know what I mean? Like, it's true, isn't it?
Well, we started talking about inflation, the 33% increase in petrol that flowed into the March figure for inflation. The April figure will show a very large fall in petrol prices. It's at, like, because I think it's about 32 cents a litre. It's actually come down even more than that.
Yeah.
So you will have that offset impact. Of course, the broader impact of prices changing because of transportation costs will filter through the rest of the inflation figures. But that one will actually fall pretty substantially.
Shane, it's fantastic to have you and your wisdom and your knowledge and leaks here on the Party Room with us this close to the budget. Thanks so much.
It's always a pleasure. And may we say, let's listen to a bit more Kate Bush.
Mm. Yeah, absolutely. And I'm going to listen to Wuthering Heights right after this. I love that song.
I just so agree. See you, Shane.
See you, guys.
See you, Shane.
Good luck.
Oh, it's so good to pick his brain. How good were some of those stats, Fran, about home ownership and who's got the investment properties?
That was insane, wasn't it, that statistic?
Well, you just look at that statistic and you're like, hmm. And that's people's experience on the ground. Geez, I wonder why this campaign has grown traction. Look, we are recording this as we do. Everyone knows, especially you long-time fun people with us for 10 years almost.
We love you.
Yeah, we do. We're recording this Thursday morning. And right now the PM and the Attorney General and a whole bunch of people are up essentially talking to the release of the Royal Commission on Anti-Semitism and Social Cohesion's interim report. Now, that was, of course, established in the wake of the Bondi terror attack, which I feel like was just yesterday. It was December 2025. This report has made 14 recommendations, just a couple of them that I think are worthy of us noting. And, of course, in episodes to come, in weeks ahead, we will get right into this. But they do include a review of the joint counter-terrorism teams around Australia with an urgent report to be submitted to police commissioners. They also recommend that New South Wales police increase security at high-risk Jewish events. Now, that one to me is such a no-brainer. I don't know what you were thinking, Fran, but I remember when that attack happened really well, like we all do, because it was so, you know.
Where were the police?
I just could not believe it. I could not believe that they were having this event and they were so exposed. It's just, it just breaks me. That's why the recommendation goes to that. It also recommends the Commonwealth, states and territories should prioritise a consistent national firearms agreement together with the National Gun Buyback Scheme. Now, that one's going to be very interesting because, remember, the Coalition, we're not great fans of some of that. And so if the Royal Commission is saying it, I think that puts them in a bit of a tricky position personally. Now, the Commissioner has also made 5 recommendations that have not been revealed publicly. Clearly, it's going to be made clear in the next couple of hours, but they must be very sensitive. So, Fran, you know, that's what we know now. There'll be more emerging, but clearly the interim report will be stuff that the government has to act on pretty quickly. You know, that's the point, like, rather than delay.
This is obviously the stuff that Dennis Richardson, former head of ASIO, was working on in the report he was originally going to do separately before we got a Royal Commission. So it's all around the security issues, the agencies, how they work, what we do, and reflects, he's not there anymore, but it reflects his concerns that Jewish Australians feel unsafe just taking their kids to school and with their kids to school, and he says that's untenable. So that's this piece of work, I think, that we're seeing here. And important to note that from next week, I understand public hearings with the Commissioner, Virginia Bell, will begin. So that's where we'll start to hear more about the anti-Semitism side of this, if you like. And that's another important moment too.
Yeah, so it'll be interesting to see how the government responds. I suspect they'll say they'll be acting on these things because they're with the New South Wales government, because, of course, some of them pertain to the New South Wales government. You'll recall that those Royal Commissions being brought together, firstly, it had started in New South Wales, now it's national. Well, that's it for the Party Room today. Keep sending your questions in because, of course, we love getting them and they're also just excellent. We do these special episodes every couple of weeks, so send them to thepartyroom@abc.net.au.
And David Spears will be back for Insiders on Background on Saturday. He's going to be speaking with the Productivity Commissioner, Danielle Wood. And the Treasurer has again promised that productivity is going to be a key pillar of the budget. So what could that look like? It'll be great to hear from Danielle Wood on this whole issue of productivity, which is, you know, PK, sometimes hard to get your head around.
It is rather dense, but such an important discussion.
And remember, follow Politics Now on ABC Listen. That's the feed where you find this Party Room podcast so you never miss an episode.
See you, Fran.
See you, PK.